One of the things that struck me with this, with regard to the firstborn of Egypt and their smiting, their destruction, it becomes much clearer as something happening internally if you substitute the word Jehovah with love. Then you have to start thinking about it differently. So, and it came to pass at midnight that Jehovah smote the firstborn in the land of Egypt. So if you swap out the word Jehovah and replace it with the word love, or the divine love, then you see it's got to be something interior that's being opened up here. And of course, if you read it more internally, you know, the state of midnight is a state where there is no charity because there's no light. And it's a total reliance on knowledge, externals, knowledge, ritual, all the things that are external in religious life. It's a total reliance on those as a means of salvation and a rejection of the disciplines of self-examination and repentance, or shunning evils as sins. So when we first come into or approach spiritual material, we come more often than not from a place of trying to understand. So, you know, it's an intellectual knowledge-based approach. It hasn't yet become an experiential approach. But there's an affection for knowledge that is very, very strong and powerful. And so these knowledges start to be collected and organized, and we find ourselves identifying with the knowledge we have as if it is our own and speaks into some sort of quality that we have. So we become enamored with knowledge as a means of spiritual development, if you like. And the firstborn of that state is what has to be dealt with at some point, so that we move away from thinking that knowledge without praxis is something that can save, to moving into the realization that truths are given not for us to take hold of and appear to be intelligent and wise. Truths are given for the purpose of being able to shed light on the condition that needs to be opened up and dealt with. And that's when charity starts to become primary. So charity is praxis. That's what it is. So another term for charity is good. And good is always defined in terms of the end. And the Lord's end is the regeneration of the human mind. And that can't happen unless we willingly take hold of truths and begin to apply them to assess the quality of our state and what's active so far as those patterns of thinking and feeling that have become second nature over the course of our lives, but are detrimental so far as our spiritual growth is concerned. And so these things need sorting out, and they constitute a multitude within us that we carry. And that same idea of multitude is found in the Gospels, where Jesus is constantly in situations where he's being pressed by the crowd. The multitude, and that multitude, you know, is just a mixture of ideas, concepts, affections, all of these things that are purely natural, and looking to the Lord for support for a natural mode of life, whereas what the disciples represent are the more disciplined aspects of higher sort of principles that are focused on the application of truths to the life of the mind. So it's all about moving from an external focus and things to an internal focus, and allowing what is of the word to actually begin to penetrate into the real issues of our life and to start to work and bring wholeness and healing to that dimension of our being. So any affection for what is genuinely true and good is from the Lord in us. It's not something arising from us as we are in ourself. And so what you have, if we come back to the story, you know, they were to carry their dough, right, the unleavened dough. And so this is what has been produced through inner work. It's what nurtures and sustains the spiritual life. So that's what it is. And it not being leavened represents the good of praxis, or that first state arising from the application of truth. So when you apply truths, which are represented in that case by, say, the meal and the fine flour, so the application of truths produces good, which can sustain, which is the dough. And that's the work of shunning evils as sins against the Lord. And so good and truth, when applied to our states of life, our states of thinking, when they're applied at that level, that's where the real transformation can come about. Externals don't count for anything unless they are accompanied by internals. And so what you have in this whole picture here with the plagues and the sort of depowering of Pharaoh and of Egypt, what you have illustrated there is basically the removal through our taking hold of truths, our removal on the reliance that we have had on our own faculties, on the senses, and thinking that we can achieve things. You know, we have to be brought to a place to see that the Lord alone is the power in the situation, that Proprium or Pharaoh actually has no power other than what is given for the purposes, as I said before, of the end, which is the regeneration of the human mind. So the first state is a focus on truth, and the second state is a focus on good. And it's an ongoing, continuous cycle of transformation. And this idea of the kneading troughs, they're described as the delight. So this is quite obscure on the surface. You read it and, you know, it's not easy to see why. But when you kind of think about it, you can see that a kneading trough is like the workspace or the state where truths are worked into good. So it speaks of that process. And so it's what is of use in that regard. And so it represents the delight associated with those affections focused on engaging in spiritual work, because that's what the kneading trough represents. And those delights are bound up in the clothes. So the delight is bound to truths, and that gives rise for affection to be grounded. So there has to be a delight in the work, in the spiritual work, which I know is not always delightful, but the fact that we keep coming back to it is because of the delights that are in that work, despite the work being difficult at times, right? And when you think about delight, spiritual delight, the delight comes from becoming reorientated toward the end to which this is all leading. That's what brings delight into the difficulty and challenging work of transformation, of bringing truths to bear on observing the nature and quality of what's arising, to shun evils as sins against the Lord. You know, the acknowledgement that the Lord is at work in all of that and is the power behind all that. This is the shoulder aspect that's described, because it speaks to all power. And so we are given the state of an as of self, that's the spiritual state. Still, there's this belief in oneself. Okay, if there's this belief in oneself, then that self has to work with all its God-given power to do the work that's involved in the regeneration of the human mind, but acknowledge that that power is the Lord. And so it's a constant need to keep coming back to an acknowledgement of the Lord, because the spiritual state is such is that it's always straying away from that acknowledgement. It's always falling into the external belief that it is a self that can do this. And so there is this constant cycle, truth to good, the truth that comes from that good. So that whole process represents what is needed for the spiritual church or the spiritual mind state, because that state is constantly falling back into believing in itself as the doer, whereas the word, you know, obviously corrects that by bringing us to see how it is that the Lord is the doer and that we do from the Lord, or from what truths offer us, you know, truths from the Word offer us. So engaging with truths in the first instance gives us choice. It provides a sense of freedom to do this or that. And so that's the nature of the unfolding of this process. And so the whole of Egypt is that level of religious sentiment that conceals the true nature of proprium and seeks to have it saved. And the plagues and everything else that's going on here is the uncovering of what's within that idea, which is death and damnation. And when it's seen, then it's rejected. And when it's rejected, you get a separation of what is of the self and what is of the Lord. And that's the liberation point. That's the point of moving out of Egypt and being delivered from that sense-based idea.